Hey, everybody, and welcome back to our podcast on statistics for the social sciences. I'm very glad you're back here. We are now moving into our discussions of other ways to describe our data, and in particular, using graphs. So up to this point, we have covered different types of descriptive statistics or ways to summarize some of the features of our data. Those measures of central tendency, mean, median, and mode are about describing the middle. And our measures of variation or variance are about describing how different our data points are from one another. Another way you could think about that is how spread out is our data. So if you can think back to those visuals of the normal distribution that we did before, if our data is really close to one another, it's kind of that peaked normal distribution, which is the red hill on the graph. If our data has some medium levels of variance, you know, moderately different from one another, it's the blue hill that's a little more spread. And then if our data is really different, like it's really spread out across all of our different people that we're measuring, then it's going to look like the green hill that's very spread, kind of that low sloping normal distribution. And these are all ways, again, to describe our data to other people. We could tell them what the mean is or what the average is. We can tell them how spread out the numbers are. But really, the most effective way usually to show data to people is graphically or through what's called data visualization. And that's what we're going to cover in today's slides. So if you haven't yet, go ahead and navigate yourself to the Week 3 roadmap page. And let's pop open the graphs and visualization slides. And you'll see these slides are a little bit briefer than last time. So we only have one episode this week. We might go a little longer than 30 minutes, but honestly, really this shouldn't take you too terribly long to work through. And hopefully that leaves you enough time to finish up SPSS Assignment 1 if you haven't got that submitted yet. All right. Our sole objective with graphing this week is to look at and evaluate different graphing techniques, graphing formats, in other words, so when to use a pie chart versus when to use bar graphs, and then we want to practice this using SPSS so that we can continue becoming familiar with that statistical software and how it can serve us. Plus, it is going to help you complete SPSS assignment 2. So, all right. Let's jump right in. Data visualization as a term is just the graphical representation of information and data. So we're just making it possible to see the data in some way, shape, or form. Slide 4 is probably a very long time ago throwback picture to you. It's the standard graph layout. You know, where we have almost like a graph paper set up. I don't know if you had those notebooks where you had all the Y and X axis, the perfect little squares to draw your graphs on. Well, that's the basis of any graph, is that kind of arrangement. And of course, if we're not remembering, just a little reminder, the axis, the line that defines positive from negative, that goes from left to right, is known as our X axis. And the line that defines positive to negative going up and down is the y-axis. Now, for the most part, when it comes to statistics, we don't really deal with all four quadrants of this graphing area. We only really look at the positive on both the x and y-axis. So it's that little picture on the right-hand side of the graph where everything's positive on both measures. That's not to say we can't go negative. We could absolutely look at negative values on things like, let's say, temperature, right? That's an easy one that can go into a negative direction. It's just with people, we don't often measure things in negative terms. So most of our graphs for statistics in the social sciences are only going to be in that positive quadrant where both the X values and the Y values are greater than zero. And you can kind of, again, see that pictured there with the, you know, the dot that's at 2 and 5. My x value there is 2, and my Y value is 5, so I would count 2 over to the right on my X axis and 5 up on the Y axis, and that is where my dot is going to lay, at least in this graph format. Now, in terms of different styles of graphs that we can use to express our data, there's a bunch I'm going to walk through. This is going to be slides 5 through about 11. On slide 5, what you see is what's called a histogram. A histogram is a very specific type of graph we use to show our raw data, the actual numbers that we have in our data set and how many. So on the y-axis, you are seeing the frequency, or how many times we have that value, and the x-axis is the possible values. So histograms can look like a normal distribution, that top left visualization here. It could be negatively skewed or positively skewed, which on this slide is called skewed left and skewed right. By the way, either set of terms is fine. You can say it's skewed left or negatively distributed, and both will refer to the same type of data layout, at least on a histogram. We can also have data that kind of looks like a flat line almost. The uniform picture there is not so exactly uniform, but it is pretty flat. And then we can have what are known as bimodal distributions, where we have more than one hill, bimodal meaning two hills, or we can have a multimodal distribution, which has several peaks to it. Just remember, when you're looking at a histogram or a graph of a frequency, the peak is always going to be a mode. It's going to be one of the most common values. So you can see sometimes we have multiple modes. That's not that uncommon when it comes to social statistics. So histograms, what you'd probably use to display things like raw data. When someone tells you they want to see your numbers in your data set, show them one of these. Scatter plots on slide 6 are a different type of visualization. It's going to be much more like that graph paper layout where we put all the dots, we plot all of our data points, and then we're looking at the relationship among all the dots. Are the dots arranged in a line? Are they kind of an upside down U shape? Do they look like a shotgun blast where there's really no pattern to them at all? It's just kind of, you know, really scattershot. That's going to help us understand the relationship between two specific variables, because that's all we're looking at with a scatter plot. How do two specific variables end up related to one another? That's really what these graphs are best used for, is to help us visualize that relationship. So just a few examples. The strong positive linear relationship in the upper left-hand corner means as one thing, one variable, is increasing, so is the other variable. This might be something like study time and test scores. As your study time goes up, so do your test scores, hopefully. The second one on the upper right, moderate, negative, and linear, generally means as one increases, the other decreases. It's not very close to a line, though, that we can see, so that's why it's called a moderate relationship, not necessarily a strong relationship. And this example, the more time I spend on Amazon, the smaller my bank account balance. It's kind of a classic, one goes up, the other goes down. The null and no relationship is, again, it looks like a shotgun blast because it's so scattered around. There's no direction to it. It's just kind of random looking. This might be something like shark attacks and ice cream sales. They don't really seem to actually correlate with one another, except that maybe there's more of them in the summer at the same time. But really, they don't line up at all. And then that strong nonlinear, where you see the almost upside down U shape, that actually is a really good visualization, let's say, of the relationship between age and crime. As in, when you're younger, you are more likely to commit crimes, but it peaks at a certain age, somewhere in your 20s, generally speaking. And then after that, most people are less likely to do so. Okay, on to slide 7, the classic bar graph. Bar graphs, you can see here, can be done a ton of different ways. Stacked, diverging, inverting, grouped, layered. all of these bar graphs are meant to A, provide quick visual comparisons. You can see the different colors, you can compare the different colors on different bars. And then they're also meant to allow you to potentially present even different time periods to one another. Think about those bars as years, let's say. There's a lot here that is really great for comparison, though. I'd say bar graphs are some of the best you can to compare between different groups or different things, because we can easily look at the color coding and the bar length, and we can understand them pretty intuitively. I want to offer a quick warning. Bar graphs are some of the easiest to manipulate to confuse us about what the data shows. So pay attention when you're looking at a bar graph to always pay attention to the axis used for the bar graph, either the x-axis if it runs left to right, if your bar runs left to right, or the y-axis if it runs top to bottom. Slide 8 shows us some line graphs. Now, line graphs are very, very common to use when we want to show something changing over time, because we as human beings tend to visualize time as moving in a certain direction, moving forward, never backward. And this allows us to think about, okay, as time has moved on, how have these things that I'm measuring changed? So here it's showing social media traffic trends. Well, we can see it runs from September in one year through September in another year. It's very easy for us to naturally understand time as the x-axis in a line graph. Slide 9 is area charts, which are a little less frequent, but they also are great for comparisons, kind of like a bar graph, but they are even more easily used to compare things like, you know, let's say the sales, like it shows here, over time. Because again, we're running from left to right with the time analysis, and the area chart is going to show us how much something dominates at that time, or maybe how much something declines over a period of time. In short, what area charts allow for is another one of these visual comparisons, but the area can represent kind of the size of the comparison, right? It's easier for more consistent comparisons over time, like these certain things that exist throughout the time period or that come and go during different time periods. And that's kind of what sets it apart from, let's say, a bar chart in terms of comparison abilities. Slide 10, the old, very old classic, the pie chart. Now, pie charts are very easy to use to show the breakdown of something. How does 100% of this thing break down into different categories or classifications? And really, that's its big strength, is showing the breakdown or the divisions in a group, let's say. Now, I will caution on this one, pie charts are constantly showing up on the bad graphs list because people don't actually make the pie chart add to 100%. You think I'm kidding? It's 100% true. There are so many pie graphs out there that are like 120%, 130%, or 140%. And these things get published in the news, even when they've got an editor looking at it. So just make sure if you do a pie chart that the percentages add up to 100%. If it's 99, it's close enough. They're trying to round, but it really should never be anywhere over 100%. Our last graphing option, or really this is more heavy on data visualization, is the use of what are known as infographics. Now, infographics are taking some sort of, let's say, non-standard graph format and using it to express data. So it's like taking the picture of a wedding cake and filling in the color up to the percentage of the cake that matches the percentage of the population that's getting married or is married. It's just a different kind of approach to showing the data. And it's very recent that this has kind of been a development. Infographics are definitely something of the 2000s, 2010s, 2020s, more than anything else. And they're a good way to add a little visual interest to something, but oftentimes we need to pay close attention to them just to make sure that whatever they're presenting is easy for others to read and understand. That is the most critical thing about an infographic. It's not really about what it's good at expressing, because you can use all kinds of different infographics to express different things, but it's more about, can we actually express what we want to in a meaningful way using, let's say, a non-standard kind of graphing approach. All right. In that last discussion, I spent some time talking about each type of graph and what it is best for. But now I want you to also think about, what can you actually show on these types of graphs? And on slides 13 and 14, I actually want you to write that out for yourself. What is a histogram best for? And what kinds of data types can we show? Can you show time on a histogram? Could you show change over time? Could you show something that is maybe not just standard number values? Like, we're not measuring heights, but we're talking about the breakdown of a group in terms of Democrats and Republicans and libertarians. I want you to think about qualitative data versus quantitative data, and whether each graphing type could show qualitative data in some way, along with that time factor and change. And once you've filled this out, go ahead and set that aside for yourself and keep it, because honestly, we generally are not great at teaching about when to use specific graphing types, and I want you to have a sense of that. If you have any problems filling in any of the columns, as in which type of graph is best for, you know, what kinds of activities or what kinds of things you're trying to express, so the example of a histogram, it's best for showing your raw data, for showing people what you have in your data set, let me know and I will try to assist you with that. It's good to think about, what does this graph style the best for showing, and then whether we can show different data types like time, like change over time, and things that might not be numbers in the normal way we look at them. Okay, I hope you took a pause there and went ahead and filled that in. If you didn't, I understand, but the reason for these activities is actually, I do want you to pause. I do want you to take some time to think critically about it and just add some notes to what exists with these slides. Aside from thinking about the best graph type, right? What is it best to express to an audience and what can we actually show with it? We need to really heavily consider, what is good data visualization? Because if you search the internet, you will find tons of bad graphs. And in fact, that is this week's discussion post. If you can find a bad graph, go ahead and post it and share it with the rest of us and tell us what it is that it seems it's trying to do, but is failing to do. And that failing list, well, what's listed on slide 15 are all things we need to avoid so that our graphs don't fail. Number one, keep it clean. No extra things you don't need, no extra words you don't need. And number two, going in line with that, it needs to be simple. People need to be able to take a look and understand most of it within probably 10 to 20 seconds, because that's probably all you're ever going to get. If you have a report that's kind of a more long form report, maybe an annual report, it might make sense to put in something that's a little more complicated, but the best graphs are going to be easy to understand with a quick glance. Number three, say what you mean and be direct. Don't use cool quotes that kind of play on pop culture, even though those may be fun, because perhaps people don't know what you're referring to and they're going to get lost in the title or the description, right? We want to be as clear as we can, because again, you're going to have eyes on this graph for not very much time, so what you need to get across needs to come across quickly and easily. Number four, you need to label everything on your graph, including your data series, using something like a legend, okay? Your data series is like what colors you're using on your line graph or what symbols you're using for different measures. You need to label it all. If you use triangles for data points, what are the triangles referring to? What is the red line for? What is the dashed line for? That kind of legend makes it clear to the reader exactly which part of the data series you are talking about. And when I say data series, I mean like you could be comparing groups of freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and seniors. Well, which of those lines is the freshman? and which is the juniors. That is your different data groupings, and each grouping has a data series, right? We're showing more than one point, or at least we would assume so. Point five, label your axis just like your legends, okay? Your axis needs to have a clear label for your X and your Y axis. Don't assume that people understand and know. And even when you're talking about something like years, I know that we generally look at the bottom and we assume it's time. So having 2016, 2017, 2018, most people will understand that if they see it at the bottom. It's not going to hurt you to add a label. You can delete it later, but add it initially. And then the last, but very, very important, point six, make sure that your axis is designed for appropriate interpretation. There's a video I've included with this set of slides, and it's going to talk about how we break up an axis or how we only show a portion of it, like only between 95 and 100 instead of between 0 and 100. When we do that, we are distorting our data. We're distorting the presentation of the data visualization. And usually when we distort things, we're doing it very intentionally because we want someone to get a different message about the data than what they would get if we showed them with the axis clearly designed for the right interpretation. And usually that means you got to show the whole axis. Even if you have no values between 50 and 100, you need to show the space between 50 and 100 on your axis between, let's say, 0 and 200. I know this is a little bit hard to maybe conceptualize, but I want you to take the time to watch the video that's shown on slide 21, and that'll help to maybe make it a little bit clearer. As of this point in the slides, you're going to move into my bad graph examples. This is slides 16 through 20, and I just want you to take a look and match the label on the heading of the slide with what the problem is with each graph. I want you to particularly think about on slide 17, what could help here? Because we've got a legend, but boy, that legend is hard to work out when we've got all 50 states. Slide 19, I really don't know how you can put this graph together and show, let's say, all the states, which makes us think that there should be a breakdown by the states, but clearly there's none. We're assuming it's all consistent. And then, oy vey, slide 20, that is in and of itself something altogether so, so very wrong. Look at the columns, the bars on there, and think about what's going wrong there, right? Like, there is no way 29.4 is the same height as 2.4, is the same height as 0.4. And since when does zero have any height to it at all as a bar chart? So I'm going to keep us on this point of bad graphs and again, ask you to watch the YouTube video on how to spot a misleading graph. It's not very long, and it does a really nice job of highlighting things like context, which are important for us to understand what is being shown to us or what story is being told to us using a graph. I don't want us to lose that thread. A graph is a version of storytelling. It's just that we assume that the story is completely factual because it's a graph and we think, ah, these are, you know, legitimate, valid numbers. And those numbers are just hard evidence. They're facts. Well, yeah, but we need to understand the full picture of it. And why are we being shown a graph in a certain way? Because maybe what is that telling us about what the message is on this graph? All right, everyone, we have made it through the major content for the slides this week, which means we're left with our SPSS practice time. So if you get yourself to slide 23, what I want you to do is open up SPSS first, and then I want you to navigate to Canvas. And if you go into the modules, basically you're going to be on the modules page, and approximately the third module from the top, you see textbook data sets. That's going to have everything from our book. Today, I want you to be working with the non-textbook data sets just below that. And in that module is called Jenny's data set. When you click on Jenny's data set, it's going to take you to a page where it then has a link to download Jenny's data set. If you have SPSS already open and you click on that download link, it should open up that data set for you in SPSS right away. And once you're there, what I want you to do is work through the slides using the guidance, and it's less guidance per se than exactly what we got last week with SPSS, but I want you to use the guidance in the slides, specifically looking at the buttons with the red bars or boxes, excuse me, around them to guide us through creating graphs in SPSS. So when we start out, we're going to start out by creating a bar chart, and I have some initial instructions that are not the visualizations of the SPSS instructions. That's on slide 23. So you're going to get into SPSS, you're going to have that data set open, and you're going to go to that graph link or command at the top. And that's when you choose chart builder. And that chart builder is, again, drag and drop. So what you'll need to do is when you get to slide 24, you're going to go to the bottom section of the chart builder and you're going to click on bar. Once you click on bar, you should have the options that you see in the bottom left-hand corner to choose from. You're going to click on the bar graph that has the red box around it, and you're going to drag it into that chart preview area. The big box just above it. It shouldn't have anything in it when you initially open up the chart builder. You're going to drag and drop it there. And then you're going to drag and drop the variables on the left-hand side to where I've put them with the different values. So sex goes into the filter by or color by, and SES goes on the bottom on the x-axis. Now you'll notice it shows count on the y-axis. It should do this pretty much automatically. And when you do this and you hit OK, you should see what is pictured on the right-hand side of slide 24. Now, from that point, I've given more step-by-step instructions on how to reorder the SES on that clustered bar chart. Follow steps 1, 2, and 3. And then if you don't see what's pictured on slide 26, let me know. That's where you should end up. And then we're going to do what's called data transformation. Now, let's say you have a raw data set with something like high, middle, and low, but you want to change those to numbers. Well, what you're doing is called data transformation. And that's what we're going to practice with the instructions on slide 27, 28, 29, and 30, and then finally 31. It's a lot of steps. Oh, wait, hold on. Through slide 32, I got ahead of myself here. Data transformation, it's a lot of steps, but it is really good practice for us because we're eventually going to do this in our final papers, especially if you have a fake data set, which, just a little note, for our final papers, we are going to need to work with raw data sets, and I will probably be generating a fake data set for you to use for that paper that lines up with your research question. I'm getting way ahead of myself here with that conversation already, but know in advance that you do not need to find raw data for your research question, or if you're doing a research question or planning to do your research paper on something that's, let's say, a sensitive topic like mental health, we're not going to be able to get raw data on that. So I will create a fake data set for you. And in the instructions to complete your paper, you'll have something around transforming data. So work your way through slide 32, and then slide 34 is just, well, it's basically how you do this in Excel in terms of creating charts. It's not data transformation, and you should confirm your SPSS data transformation on slide 33 here. If, again, you run into any problems with that process, do email me and let me know, and I will get back to you as soon as I can. And with that, we have truly covered all of the material for the slides. We've gotten through everything we need to with SPSS. Please do make the time to do the practice sessions in that software. It's really going to be important for you to do so that you can manage finishing up the assignments, SPSS 1 and 2, And SPSS 1, by the way, is due on Sunday, September 7th. So get that into me if you haven't submitted already. And if you're running into problems, let me know. Also due this Sunday, your research project survey. So that whole conversation where I was getting ahead of myself by talking about fake data sets, that survey is where you tell me, here's what I'm thinking about studying or writing about for that paper. I do not, repeat, do not care which topic you choose for that paper. You can choose sports. You can choose psychology. You could choose alien investigations. All topics are on the table. But we will need to figure out a research question that you can answer using statistics in relation to that topic. And actually, that's what that survey is going to ask you, is to answer a few questions about that topic, how much you know about it, and if you've looked at the final paper kinds of guidelines. If you haven't, go ahead and take a look. After that, make sure you're staying on top of the reading. We've got chapter 5 next time where we're talking about correlation. And then our second quiz is open for you right now to finish. Like the discussions, you only need to do 5 of the quizzes. Just keep on top of that. And remember, there's only 7 quizzes throughout the semester. It's not like the discussions in that there's 12. There's only 7. So if you miss 2, you're going to need to do the next 5 because those will be included in your final grade. Okay, I'm going to wrap up here. I will be posting a very brief podcast later this week to talk about some of the terms that you all highlighted in the discussion as far as what do we need clarification on for statistics terms. I didn't want to put all of that in here because that's a lot to explain, you know, telling the difference between standard deviation and mean deviation or the scales of measurement, what is an unbiased estimate. That's a long conversation. So I'm going to reserve that for a separate podcast episode that'll be shorter than this one, but it'll be devoted just to that. Thank you again for taking the time to listen to this. I hope you all have a great rest of your day and week. And as always, you can email me anytime at jemille1@wsc.edu. Okay, catch up with you all again soon.